powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
One of our absolute favorites joining us right now, ESPN's John Buchegross on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bucci Main, how's it going?
What?
We're so happy to have you on, especially in a season that has been so much better for this team. Like, we loved having you on to talk about, like, you know, kind of like, oh, what can we expect in a first year for an expansion franchise that, you know, is kind of struggling. And now the Kraken are really fun to watch. I mean, let's start there. What have you seen in some of the major differences between last year's team and this year's?
Yeah, I mean, people were pretty bullish on them last year. Some people had them making the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. You know, a couple of tweaks here and there. Obviously, some of the players playing better. Just kind of getting your feet after year one. Obviously, it's exceeded expectations maybe a little bit. But again, people were kind of bullish on them last year. So, It is a bit of a mystery to figure out how it just kind of clicked here and there. But, you know, you get off to a good start and you start to build some momentum. And hockey is such an emotional game. It's such an emotional sport. It's a blood sport. So you can really do a lot with emotion as opposed to baseball is like, you know, it's a long everyday season. You're either good or you're not. Hockey, you can ride waves sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so far, so good.
Speaking of emotions, John, I've had my heart broken too many times in my life. So when I see a good thing happening, I look at the Kraken, even with the Seahawks out here, I sit back and I wait. I'm like, I'm going to wait and ride this thing out and see how it ends up. With the Kraken,
too many times.
I've been hurt too many times,
John. Yeah, your life sounds like a Taylor Swift song.
It is. Hey, me and Taylor have the same birthday, as you mentioned. That's kind of crazy. Yeah.
Right.
But is it time to get emotionally invested in the Kraken and say, you know what, this could really be a playoff team?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're past the halfway mark. You know, you're in first place in the Pacific Division. You got games in hand on everybody behind you. You know, you got two games in hand on Vegas. You got three on LA, you know, two on Edmonton. You got one on Calgary. So, I mean, you got games in hand on everybody. You know, there's 35 games left. Got a great plus, you know, goal differential plus 27. That's always a good number to look at. So, yeah, absolutely. This team is, they have cap space. They're going to add at the deadline. They'll bring in another player. It just comes down to the goaltending. You know, I know you can't, when you look at their numbers and look at who they have in net, it's like, man, what happens if they really poop the bed here in the finish and they lose 8 out of 10 at some point, and then suddenly they're a bubble team again. So that's the thing. I'm kind of curious. I assume they'll ride with what they have this year in net. But that still is the great mystery is, you know, will they have enough to offset, you know, what's going on in net?
Hey, obviously we want to talk a lot about the Kraken, but while we have you, we figured we'd take a quick look around the league as well. The Kraken just beat the Canucks for the very first time last night. Canucks in a really weird place with some of the stuff that's been going on there. What do you make of that entire situation with Vancouver?
Yeah, just kind of, you know, they kind of got out of hand with them, you know, waiting to make the, you know, you hire a GM. You got a weird contract when they bring in Bruce Boudreaux last year, and he has an option to come back this year. Obviously, he's going to do it. He's going to take his $2 million. You're not going to get that, you know, working at Chick-fil-A. So you take the $2 million and then wait to see what happens. And, of course, what happened was, obviously, when you bring in a new GM, they're eventually going to bring in their own guy. So the owner is really a pain in the butt because he didn't want to really rebuild and tank at any point. So then you're just kind of keeping your head above water. And that, as we know in the cap world with sports, that doesn't work. So now they got to kind of pay the piper. They still seem like they're kind of half in, half out. They don't know what to commit to. They make another signing today. They'll trade Bo Horvat, maybe to Seattle. And so, you know, they're just in a weird place. You can't be half in, half out. It's one or the other. And it seems like to me they're still kind of stuck in the middle. And as long as you do that, you're not going to go anywhere. So just kind of an owner who has certain expectations, a new GM, And it's just it's just a little off moored there in Vancouver right now.
Speaking of Vancouver, last night, Tyler Myers, nice little cross check against our guy Matty Beniers. Was that like a hey rookie, know your place type deal, a dirty play? And then how do you think the Kraken handled that situation afterwards?
Yeah, that's such a clear cut, dirty interference mugging. I just can't believe that even happened. And that stuff doesn't really happen too much anymore. So you got to take that matter into your own hands and protect your rookie and show them he's an important part of the team and do whatever you can, whether it's this time or next time or at that moment. So yeah, at some point, and that might be something that the Kraken might be looking to add up front, maybe some snarl, maybe amongst the forwards a little bit. Although come playoff time, there's not a lot of that. But again, like I said, it's still about emotion. It's good to have a bully or two on your team and to kind of prevent that stuff or respond to it quickly. You don't want to be just a robotic type of team. You do want to have a lot of heart and blood and someone who can really set the tone. That goes into team building and constructing a roster, constructing an organization that you're not going to take that, and there will be repercussions. And like I said, if you could have a guy or two that can help prevent that, that always helps. Obviously, the days of just a goon are gone, but you can have some guys, and they're rare. That's why they're so valuable. Yeah. Tom Wilson, that kind of guy.
We're speaking right now with ESPN's John Buchagross, talking about the Kraken, but let's talk trades here. I want to get back to Bo Horvat. We saw you wondering if Shane Wright might be made available in a trade with Vancouver. Do you think Seattle would be willing to deal Wright less than a year into his career?
I do, man. I mean, sometimes in life you got to be bold. Sometimes you got to contact Taylor Swift and say you share the same birthday.
That's
exactly. And would you write a song about my life?
I've
you got to do stuff
that.
Like that. Yeah. So, it'd be bold. It'd be big. But they got their man, Matty Beniers. Again, the Kraken are built to win now. And this is not a young, plucky expansion team like the days of yore. These are now. We saw Vegas expansion draft. You bring in older guys, get to the Cup final their first year, multiple Western Conference finals. And I'm sure there's still a little bit of that in the back of Seattle's mind. It's like, hey, we want to make a playoff run like they did. I'm sure they don't compare themselves directly. That was a bit of a fluke. But they're, look at the age of their players, and like they're ready to go. 25, 26, 27, 28. Beniers is the one really young stud who will be here for 10, 12 years and will grow and really become the face of the franchise. And I just wonder if Wright, can bring that kind of, if you're going to wait for Shane Wright for 2, 3, 4 more years when he blossoms, do you kind of go for it now? So it'd be bold. It'd be maybe not quite Ron Francis's bag, baby. But, I just think it's something. I'm sure, hey, when you have these discussions around the big conference table, the overpriced conference table, and I'm sure it's an expensive one in Seattle, you say everything. What about this? What does everybody think about this? What can we get in return? And again, Vancouver being so close, if that's going to become one of those real regional heated rivalries, Yankees, Red Sox kind of a thing, Penguins, Capitals, you don't always make a deal with those kinds of teams in case it goes wrong. And then you got to watch this guy for 10 years. But I don't see Shane Wright as that kind of transcendent talent like that. Probably a really good player, but why not get a guy who's fully blossomed now and maybe even another piece if they want to exchange. And so again, you have to talk about everything, safe as death. You got to go for it. And that would be pretty bold.
When you look at this team on paper, you're breaking down the stats. We all know that the game is played on the ice, not on paper, right? But when you break them down on paper, is there a category that is a clear indication that this team is showing vast improvement and is moving in the right direction?
Actually, the game is played in television sets. So that's where it's played. Not on paper, but on flat screen TVs.
Gotcha.
I'm just a little concerned about goaltending, and especially come time in the playoffs. It's, you don't win with good goaltending. You win with, great goaltending. And, right now, you look at the save percentage of Martin Jones, it's 895. I mean, it's under 900, That's not usually the number of a first place team. And, Grubauer's 893. Like, I don't know how they're doing it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But again, they're a veteran team. with a lot of balance. And now they add, again, they add Beniers, who is such an interesting, you know, dynamic factor. Bjorkstrand's got to a real slow start, but if he has a hot finish, he's a professional player. Again, they have a lot of grown-ups on their team. So they have grown-ups, and they're just meshing at the right time. But again, the goaltending situation is interesting. I wonder if they might take a flyer on somebody like a Corpusalo in Columbus, who is a free agent to be, won't be expensive, not an expensive guy. He's had back-to-back really good games against Calgary and Edmonton, two high-caliber teams. He's in the other conference. You know, do you throw a third or fourth round pick their way? I think that's all it's going to cost to get him, probably. And do you bring him in just in case, give him a couple starts? Like I said, you don't win playoff games with a save percentage under 900 because, you know, you're only playing good teams now. You're playing them over series where they can start learn about you. So that's my only concern about the Kraken. But everything else, veteran, you know, on a good momentum, a couple young guys playing for big contracts, you know, events done and things like that. Everything's just kind of working this year, and they're in a good place. The final frontier, the big mystery is goaltending.
You know, my question was really just an extension of your answer. You kind of answered half of it. I was wondering if you thought, you know, Martin Jones could improve, or, you know, if Grubauer can turn this around, or if they should get outside help. But it sounds like they might have, if they want to get to the playoffs, no choice but to go get outside help, would you say?
Right, exactly. Again, yeah. Even if it's just insurance, even if you're just, you know, not sure, and just want to give it a shot, because it won't be expensive. Like I said, someone like that is not that expensive. So it's just a matter of, you know, and, you know, again, the power play is pretty good this year. It's, you know, it's over 20%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's obviously a good factor. And, you know, their penalty kill isn't great, but that's usually, you know, because of the goaltending, right? I mean, their penalty kill is 31st in the league. Only the Canucks are worst, 71%. So again, you go against a high caliber team in the playoffs, they got you don't get a lot as many power plays in the playoffs, but you know, you give up three or four a game, well, that's a guaranteed goal. When, you know, when you're 70%. So there's one, you're in the hole. So I just wonder if they look at this and if they identify whether it's a stopgap like Corpusalo, or they see a young guy somewhere out there, an organization has a little bit of goaltending depth, and you can make a kind of a deal that way where you give up something they need and you get that young goaltender, so the Kraken think beyond this year. Because obviously, I don't know if they envision themselves winning the Stanley Cup this year. Probably not. Mainly
not
because
with that
of what's
attitude.
Going on. You're right.
Come on, John.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fair. Very fair point. Fair point.
I'm a loser.
John, I'm not gonna lie, man. I haven't grown up.
Not you're a journalist.
I grew up in West LA, Culver City, and hockey wasn't huge in my area, at least with my group of friends. So I used to watch the Kings a little bit, but as soon as the Kraken were announced, I tried to like dive into it and watch as many games as I can. And yesterday I learned a new phrase. I learned what a saucy pass was, and I'm so excited to tell Stacey.
John, he has been saying it all day. I kid you not.
Hey, saucy passes all day from your boy. Give me another term. Like, for guys like me who are just now falling in love with the game, what's a hockey term I can throw out there when I sit with my boys and I look like I know what the heck I'm talking about?
Yeah, funny. I'd say about 10 years ago, I started doing some video vlogs, we called them, where and one time I did them on hockey vocabulary, kind of like, you know, the stuff that the college kids and maybe your real extreme hockey dudes, what they were saying at the time to describe different things. And yeah, the sauce pass originally comes from saucer pass. That was like, you know, 20-30, they called it a saucer pass, where you kind of flip it and it looks like a flying saucer. Mm-hmm. Then it became sauce, nice sauce, that saucy. So any kind of sauce is just a really good, you know, pair of hands that kind of lifts the puck off the ice over the defender's stick, and then lays nice and flat, like a perfect spiral is a nice sauce pass. But,
nice.
You know, if a guy's not a good player, you can call him a bender or a duster. You know, your ankles bend, someone who can't ice skate for the first time. So you call him a bender, him a duster, you know, a sieve is obviously they scream sieve at a goalie, you know, sieve, sieve, sieve. And so, yeah, there's a lot of them. I'll have to email you a bunch of turns. But, yeah, I wish I had that video vlog you could watch. And, but yeah, a wagon, a big winger who's tough and strong is a wagon, can't control him. You know, he's big, he flies down the wing and is a real wagon. And that now that they borrowed that term to put on a whole team, like the Kraken are a wagon this year, they're in first place. But he used to be just an original big, strong skater who just kind of destroyed people. And now they've kind of adopted to a team as well. You can be this. Your radio show is a wagon right now. You guys are soaring.
John, you just gave me so much ammo. I'm going to walk into my buddy's bar. I bet you're a bender, huh? You're a bender, ain't you?
You can play pool. You can play in darts. You bender. You're a duster. So, yeah.
I love it. Thank you.
You bet.
He is one of our absolute favorites. And, John, I'm so glad that you took out some time of your schedule to talk with us. It's a really, really exciting time to not just be a Seattle sports fan, but to be a Kraken fan. And we've loved your insight, not just to the Kraken. Bump's got new words to say. We know a little bit more about the Canucks. Yeah. We know a little bit more about hockey and goaltending. All of it's really important. John Buccigross, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. I'm at LA Fitness, so back to my workout.
Exactly.
Now, I interrupted my workout for you. 50 sets of curls, one set of squats. Let's go.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Peace.
All right, that was ESPN's John Buccigross, a.k.a. Bucci Main, joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline this hour of Bump and Stacey, brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. All right, Bump, you learned a lot of new hockey phrases, but you know plenty already. Your arena is football, so let's get to some X's and O's with Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
All right, now Bump is teaching us some things. First down, what are your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers blaming Big Pharma on the propaganda toward him not being vaccinated?
My goodness, Stacey, I saw this, I read this article on Pro Football Talk, and I'm like, for real, Aaron? Like, for real? Let's say it is a big plan by Big Pharma to make Aaron Rodgers look like a liar. Guess what? You did lie about it, dog. You lied about your vaccination status. You said, I'm immunized.
Yes.
Immunized, right? Dancing around the question. And here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers. Big Pharma had nothing to do with what I think about him and how he answers questions and how he treats people. It's just him. He just hasn't been likable. You lied to the media. Like, I base my own judgment off of what you have shown me. And it's so typical of Aaron Rodgers to point the finger. It's just laughable sometimes. I honestly think at this point, he just does it because he knows he's going to get a rise out of people.
Yes.
And I read the article, and it got a rise out of me. I'm like, it's everybody but you, isn't it, Aaron? So, no, I don't blame Big Pharma. Even if they were doing it, I base my decision off of what you shown me for the past 10, 12 years. It just made me laugh. I'm like, come on, Aaron, again?
I know. That's a good way to say it, is it's everyone but you all the time, isn't it? Second down. Yesterday, you were convinced that a hobbled Pat Mahomes could change the outcome of the AFC Championship game this weekend. He was a full participant at practice yesterday, so how are you feeling about the championship game now?
What I'm about to do right now, back home, they call you a hood hopper, right? You claim you're from this hood, then you claim you're from that hood. That's how I feel about this game, because I go, yesterday, I'm thinking Cincinnati, baby. Let's go. Cincinnati's going to get it. Pat Mahomes is hurt.
You're a hood hopper.
I'm hood hopping right now. And
wow.
Then I see a video of him without a limp. Like, he's at the podium.
Yeah.
He, like, bounces down the stairs. I'm looking at, is he on his toes?
You know what's he's trying to.
Like? Yeah. Oh, he's put on a show.
Yes.
Most definitely. He was a full participant at practice, and I'm thinking, he could be ready to go. If so, I've never seen someone bounce back from a high ankle sprain the way this guy is doing. But he has a history of bouncing back from injuries. In 2019, he threw for 400 yards and two touchdowns on a tweaked ankle. In 2022, he played with turf toe. So we know this guy can play. We know that he is tough and he will push through it. But I'm looking at the way he's bouncing around. I'm like, okay, I need to see more film. So then I get on Twitter. Then I'm watching him at practice. They're doing this lazy little warm-up that they do. And he looks like he's a bit ginger. There's this one move where you stand on one foot, you bring the back leg up, and the ankle that's hurt, he lost his balance a little bit. So I'm still analyzing. I'm saying, okay, am I still with Cincinnati or am I with the Chiefs? Then he jogs over to his coach. The worst thing about his jog, it already looks funny.
It
already has a funny looking jog.
Yes.
So I couldn't really tell. But if Pat Mahomes looks anything like he did at that podium, I'm scared. But like you said, he's putting on a show. He knows all eyes are on him. So I'm almost hopping back to the Chiefs hood, but I'm still in Cincy right now. Almost.
So you're like on the springboard to leap back into the hood, but you haven't made the jump yet.
Yeah,
two things. Number one, Patrick Mahomes jogs and runs like I do, which is not a compliment and no professional athlete should be able to claim. And two, conspiracy theory, what if he is not as hurt as we think?
Yeah.
And this is all to add to the story of their Super Bowl run. Huh?
I wouldn't put it past them.
Third down. Who on the Seahawks staff is a guy you all caps underscore bold need to keep around?
Now, I was fishing around, you know, the NFL, seeing what other teams are talking about. And we hear Sean McVay is looking for a brand new coaching staff, it seems like. And he's looking for a guy to be his offensive coordinator. And it sounds like he wants to lean more into the run. Who do we get from the St. Louis Rams? This guy, Andy Dickerson. To start the season, this offensive lineman was ranked 32nd by PFF. They got to number 14 and were as high as number 11 before the end of the season where they took a dip. All right, they were 63% pass block win rate. That's number 8 in the league. Andy Dickerson has 17 years of experience. He was assistant O-line coach from 2012 to 20 over there with the Rams. He was a 2021 run game coordinator with the Seahawks, and he was a 2020 O-line coach. I'm looking at this situation, and I'm saying what he helped do with this offensive line with two rookie tackles was special. These guys came in ranked 32nd, got as high as number 11. He knows what he's doing. And if I am Sean McVay, I'm taking a strong look at Andy Dickerson and saying, how you like it over there?
Yep.
You want to come back to L.A.? I got a spot for you. More responsibility. If we want this offense to continue to go, to continue to improve, Andy Dickerson has been a big part of this. Yes, Shane Waldron has been doing his thing. Everyone else involved. But it's all about the big boys. David from Issaquah. It is all about the big boys up front. All right, so I look at Andy Dickerson and I say, you got to keep this guy, man. He cannot bounce.
No, hashtag protect the Ginge. Fourth down. All right, I'm springing this one on you. So you might have to, you can change your answer later when we get back to four down territory, but maybe the first names that come to mind now. You only need two, one for each game.
All right.
Which non-quarterback can or will have the biggest impact on the outcome in each of these two games? So it can be a non-quarterback from either team. You don't have to pick four guys.
All right, let's go to the NFC. I'm looking at the NFC, and when we talk about the 49ers, there's about six names that you're going to hear consistently, right? I'm not even going to say those names. You know who I'm talking about. But I'm going to look at Elijah Mitchell. If he's able to help out Christian McCaffrey, right, to do what we've seen him do in the past, have a big game, I think the Niners have a real good chance to win that game, even though Philly has a good defense of their own over there. We go to the other side of the thing. This guy I thought was done. I thought he was done in the league. He was done in Pittsburgh. Juju Smith-Schuster. If he can go out there and have himself a game and be reliable and be that big target, I think the Chiefs have a good chance to win this ball game. But that's what it's all about. We're going to hear about Pat Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Brock Purdy, Jalen Hurts. It's about the supporting cast. We're going to hear about A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jamar Chase. We're going to hear about all these guys. There has to be one guy, a number two or number three, who does something that you're not expected to do, that no one game planned for, that's going to push the team to victory. So initially, those are the two guys I'm looking at.
I like that. All right. If we get back to four down territory, you can always be like, all right, here's two more. Devil's advocate. I'll say two more here. All right. Coming up in the timeline, the Carolina Panthers have a new head coach, plus Quandre Diggs and Geno Smith sound off about a snub. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
You are listening to Bump and Stacey, and this is The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. So viral stories, recent news, fun things, things Seahawks, Mariners, Kraken players are saying, and of course, stunts. Viral campaigns, something I'm very upset about. In fact, let's get to that right now. A Loyola college basketball game Duquesne college basketball game was interrupted by an Uber Eats delivery guy.
Loyola would take over 10 minutes before we get a stoppage, and we've got an official's timeout. And somebody came on the floor on the far side. Looking for an Uber Eats delivery or something? There is carrying some McDonald's.
Oh, this has to be one of the all-time
greats. I'm actually not kidding.
No, this is the truth.
I think that's what's happening.
This guy's in the corner. Looked like was he going to deliver the McDonald's to somebody on the court? Can we rule that out?
I think that's an Uber Eats sticker. Is that what that is? I'm trying to get confirmation. Uber Eats, yes.
Maybe I'll put my hand up. I'm getting a little hungry. You can bring it over here.
So on the video of this, you can see what looks like an Uber Eats guy or a DoorDash guy holding up a McDonald's bag and a drink looking for someone. And it was this really funny moment where we were all like, ha, 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 look at this Uber Eats delivery guy interrupting a college basketball game. But no, Bump. There are now strong rumors this was either a stunt or just a viral ad campaign from Uber Eats. And I am heartbroken.
Man, it was.
Nothing's real.
It was hilarious when I thought it was real.
Yeah.
Like, I was rolling. The look on his face, he looked so confused. He's looking for a hand to be up. Like, who am I delivering this to? And then I'm thinking, who at that game said, you know what? Concession stands are too expensive. They don't have what I like. I'm going with Mickey D's, and I'm going to Uber Eats this thing. But then we found out it was fake, man. So disappointing.
I'm devastated. Frankly, I'm devastated.
This time of year is the worst for that because everybody's gearing up for their Super Bowl ad that they want to get publicity for prior to it airing. Mm-hmm. So you never know if these sets. Like, remember when Drew Brees a couple months ago was rumored to have been struck by lightning, which that turned out to not be the case? We have not seen the commercial that he was shooting when that all happened. So I'm guessing that will get debuted during the Super Bowl.
Yes, but see, I'm very glad that Drew Brees didn't get struck by lightning and die. However, I do wish that there really was an Uber Eats delivery guy interrupting a college basketball game. Like, I think that would be a great story, but I guess we'll find out in the Super Bowl whether or not this was for a commercial. Keep your eyes out. All right, next up here in the timeline, new head coaching hire for the Carolina Panthers. They are hiring former Colts head coach Frank Reich as the next head coach for Carolina. Now, this is generating some controversy for this reason. Steve Wilks took over as interim coach for the Carolina Panthers, a team that had no answer at quarterback and not a very competitive roster. He turned them into potentially a playoff team in a weak NFC South, did a great job with this team, rallied the team. They didn't end up making it to the playoffs, but it wasn't for lack of challenging the Buccaneers for that title. And yet he doesn't get this job. And it's not like just being interim coach means you deserve the job, but you do feel for Steve Wilks in this case because I'm not sure what else he could have done to be able to show that he can lead this team, especially when they got 6 wins after how many years of no more than 5? I mean, 6 wins might have been one of their better finishes in a while. They finished 7-10.
It's rare that an organization hires an interim coach.
Yeah.
That is rare. You hardly see it. And the thing about the Panthers is that there's some potential there with this Panthers team. Mm-hmm. I mean, their run game was solid, at least against us it was. You had 2 running backs running all over the yard. Sam Darnold looked okay. You have a good receiver in DJ Moore. If DJ Moore can get some help around him, he'll be all right. And you're in one of the weakest divisions in football. It's not like it's going to be it's difficult to win in the NFL, period. But when you're looking at divisions, you want to be in that division. So I feel bad for my man, but I didn't expect him to hire him. You don't hire the interim coach unless you're Jeff Saturday. And you might get that nod.
Jeff Saturday with a second interview with the Colts may be hired as the Colts' actual head coach moving forward. Yeah. And I know there have been people that have successfully made the transition from sports voice or being in the booth to being a really productive front office member or coach, right? I mean, John Lynch is who people always point to. But, oh, man, you kind of feel for, I don't know, I feel for Wilks here. But it's not like Frank Reich isn't also qualified. I mean, the conversation we were having last year, you're right, or earlier this year, excuse me, was about, like, poor Frank Reich.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Everyone's hurt. Right? You don't have a quarterback. What are you going to do? All right, moving on to the next story here. An audit discovered that LSU accidentally gave Brian Kelly an extra cool $1 million during his first season as head coach. You know how those tax accidents happen.
You know how much, like,
I think
how do you not notice $1 million is gone? That's how much revenue.
Millions and millions and
exactly.
Millions.
That's how much revenue LSU football makes every single year that a simple $1 million off your books didn't even register with anybody.
No red flags for $1 million over there. Uh-huh. Like, we got $1 million missing. We'll find it. But here's what.
It'll turn up.
I hope Brian Kelly didn't do. I hope he didn't spend it. I mean, I'm sure he has it. He can just give it back to him. You know, even if he did spend that $1 million, he's got millions in the bank. But my mom always told me, she goes, look, man, if that check comes in a little high, you better hold on to that money because they will be asking for that money back. So I wonder what he did with that. But imagine, like, okay, you get about an extra 50 to 100K per check over time. I think when you're dealing with that much money, he has a lot of money. The organization has a lot of money. You don't really cash that until the end of the year where you're doing all your audits or whatnot.
Yeah.
So I can easily see $1 million slipping by for sure.
If you found $100 randomly, would you keep it?
Heck yeah.
Randomly? Yeah. If it's on the street,
if you found $100,000 randomly, would you keep it?
Keeping it.
That's when it makes me nervous because I'm like, whoever has this money, they're going to come looking for it.
Yeah.
I don't know about $100,000. I'm walking away.
I'm holding on to it for at least a year, though, to make sure. Coming for this or not?
Yeah. All right. Next up in the timeline, two Seahawks players have sounded off on their disappointment that Pete Carroll is not included in the Coach of the Year nominations. Quandre Diggs is the first of the two. He says, man, I don't understand how Pete isn't a finalist, not a top five coaching job with a team that everybody expected to be sorry. Y'all killed me last year when I said, Pete told me we're not rebuilding. We're trying to win now once I resigned, which is true. I remember people giving Quandre a hard time with like, whatever you want to do. Gino kept it simple, saying only Peter, Clay, Carroll, period, and retweeting the Coach of the Year noms.
Yeah, I was yelling it yesterday.
You were.
Like, there's no reason for Pete Carroll not to be in the conversation. I don't expect him to win it. But you got Doug Peterson in that thing. You got McDermott. You got Kyle Shanahan. You got Sirianni, who I'm missing, and Dabo. Like, all these guys are worthy of it. But the job that Pete Carroll did, him and his staff, was impressive. You turn a backup quarterback into a Pro Bowler. You draft a fifth-round Pro Bowler. You have Offensive Rookie of the Year, presumably, possibly him or Garrett Wilson are going to win that thing. Mm-hmm. They're in the mix. You start two rookie tackles, something that hasn't been done in 10-plus years in the NFL. Like, he had to roll the dice on a lot of situations, and he did well. So the fact that he, again, is not mentioned is ridiculous to me.
I just don't get what it is that Pete did that is drastically different or worse than what Brian Daboll and Doug Peterson did. Like, both had bad squads that were not projected to make the playoffs and overperformed and overexceeded expectations based on the talent they had. Like, all three coaches did that.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to Doug Peterson, to Brian Daboll for being nominated, for doing great jobs and exceeding those expectations. And both advanced to the divisional round, which I guess the Seahawks didn't. But everyone thought the Seahawks would be one of the worst teams in football. Like, it wasn't just, oh, they're going to have a bad season. It was like, this is going to be horrendous, horrific television that we're about to watch. Like, the way that the national audience was talking about the Seahawks was like they would be 32-32.
We had a montage for the pre and post game show.
Yeah,
it's about 3.5 minutes. Nassachoby kept receipts, and it was just hate after hate after hate. Some guy has to cut the Seahawk logo in his head because he was so confident they weren't going to make the playoffs. So yeah, I don't understand how you can go from one of the most talked about teams when it comes to not having success to getting into the playoffs, and then people just look the other way like it never happened, and Pete Carroll wasn't a huge part of that.
Well, and it's also the Giants went 9-7-1. Like, because they had a tie, they ended up finishing with a better record because they had one less loss, but it's not like they finished with 12 wins and were dominant. Like, you have essentially the same record, the same number of wins. And again, you did it with a team people weren't counting on to be good. I think it's because Brian Daboll is a first-time head coach, and maybe he's getting some of that attention, and people are seeing him as being directly responsible for it. But I don't know how you can't say the same about Pete Carroll. It's very strange. All right. We are going to be talking baseball back-to-back here. Gary Hill of Mariners Radio Network is going to be joining us. We're going to talk about what to expect in spring training, how this roster's looking, whether or not we may see another trade here. Some interesting stuff from Jerry Dipoto today on that. That's coming up at noon. Before we get to it, though, skeletal movement. I know you might be wondering, why are we talking about that? Well, because it came up in part of a very interesting conversation about how the Mariners are team building. We are going inside baseball next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
We were talking about whether or not you would keep money that you found on the sidewalk. Like, if I see $10, I'm keeping it, but like, you got to worry about, like, what do I look like doing this? But more importantly, would you keep a lot of money? Either way, we had someone text in some advice for us. Bump 206 says, As a side gig, I was a bouncer in Pioneer Square. I see people drop money all the time. I have a move where I step on it and do an electric slide type of move to the beat and then slide that money to the sidelines where I pick it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Respect.
That's go-to right there.
I feel
there.
Like I should be saying, like, no, no. Okay, you immediately, you know, give it to the police or return it, but respect the move.
As much money as I've dropped in my life, I'm sure thousands of dollars before.
Oh.
20 bucks here, 10 bucks there. The universe is going to give it back to you. So you just step on it, electric slide, and keep it pushing.
Sometimes I think that's the way people have to look at it, is everyone's always like, oh, is this bad karma if I do this? What if you've had so much good karma from being a good person that this is good karma rewarding you, right?
Exactly.
This is karma making a payment when it's due. All right. We are going to bring on Gary Hill in about 15 minutes to talk about spring training, preview what we're going to see here. Pitchers and catchers reporting in about a little over 2 weeks now, which is crazy, right around the corner. But Bump, before we get to that, we wanted to go inside baseball. This is a fascinating conversation. I will be the first to admit that while I love baseball, I do not know a ton about not just advanced analytics. Like, I get, you know, Fangraphs WAR or whatever, like basic stuff. But you were taking a listen to Hot Stove and what Dave Cameron had to say. And he was talking a lot about skeletal movement. And it made you come to a realization about how you think the Mariners are team building. Tell me a little bit about what you learned.
Yeah, I'm searching right now because I'm trying to figure out the moves that the Mariners are making and why they're making it. And I'm listening to this podcast and I'm taking notes on it and I'm saying, okay, if this is true, this is from Dave Cameron. He's the director of player procurement. Pretty much a whole bunch of data. He oversees it. They're trying to get ahead of the curve in baseball. For example, 10 years ago, he says that the Astros were ahead of the curve when it came to ball tracking. And you kind of see where they've excelled in that. But then the league caught up, right? Because as soon as there's a trend out there, word's yeah. going to get out. Everybody catches up. So right now they're focusing on player movement in space and skeletal movement. So all that's saying is trying to get players to move efficiently. And how can you get the most out of these players? He also focused on, he gave Teoscar Hernandez as an example and says, they're more focused on the action, not the result. Teoscar will hit the ball hard. Okay, they're not worried about how many times he flies out or line drives or what. They go, if he can hit the ball hard consistently, good things are going to happen. So they're breaking down skeletal movement, right? How can we get more movement on the slider? How can we get more pop on the bat? So they're breaking down how players are moving and where they are in their career. They're saying we're not looking at his numbers as a 28-year-old and saying that's what we need. We're looking at his movement as a 32-year-old and saying, okay, how can we use that movement to help our baseball team and improve? So then they're talking about how they want to develop, right? They're talking about Cal and Julio and Ty and all these guys. How can they get them better? They're depending on them getting better to help this baseball team. Then it all started to make sense. I go, so what they're saying is they're getting players right now that they like as far as their movement and not necessarily the results that they're getting out of these guys. I'm fishing here. I'm trying to figure out the angle where they
may feel more confident than I do about this.
Yeah, so why would you get Wong? You know, why would you get AJ? Why would you get Teoscar? It's because there's something in their game that they love, that they feel that they can, and the way they move or whatnot, that they love, that they feel is going to enhance their team and is going to reflect in success. Now, they didn't go get the big names, right? They said, JP, you're good at shortstop. We're not going to go get big names. We're going to get guys who we feel fit what we're trying to build according to our analytics. There's like a group of 14 to 16 people who are a part of this department. Yeah. Whereas, I think he says 3 or 4 years ago, there were like 6 or 7. So again, this is baseball. Baseball is constantly changing when it comes to data. And he also mentions that it's never going to be a finished product. There's always going to be some type of analytics out there that teams are working with to get ahead of the curve. And he thinks right now that the Mariners could be ahead of the curve when it comes to these analytics, when it comes to movement and all that stuff. And as a guy who owns a training facility, I'm all about movement. I want to get my athletes to move as efficiently as possible. And I think that's what they're leaning on. They're saying we like what they bring to the table. We feel like with these analytics and with this data, we can help them reach a place they haven't been before, and that's going to help our baseball team.
Skeletal movement. I would love to be part of a department for skeletal movement. Curtis, you were nodding along with some of what Bump was saying. What were you hearing?
Yeah, I kind of look at it as though the Mariners are trying to find other ways to improve outside of the traditional ways, which is what you want to see out of a team. You want to see out of an organization. And maybe this is a way for them to overcome their shortcomings in payroll, because as we know, they have not opened up the pocketbooks to, I think, a degree that a lot of Mariners fans and people around baseball were expecting them to. But if they're able to kind of make guys more efficient in their movement, cut down on some of the unnecessary, you know, steps that it takes to get a guy up to top speed or something like that, then you're going to see improvements for sure. We've seen their pitching department just turn every bullpen arm into like an elite bullpen thrower. I mean, Eric Swanson, before he made it to the bullpen, was, you know, a pretty average starter, below average starter. He comes to the bullpen last year and he was filthy out of there. Mm-hmm. They use him in the trade to get Teoscar Hernandez. We've seen Paul Sewald take a huge leap in his career coming here. So finding those ways to kind of tweak here and there with players has obviously been a benefit to the Mariners, and you got to be, you know, always constantly looking for that next way to figure it out.
Yeah, this sounds like a mix to me between, like, if Moneyball and then genuine kind of like an analytical approach to baseball had a child, it would be this, right? Where it's like, yes, part of it is genuinely improving baseball and trying to be a step ahead and trying to think of how to make every player on your team better and tap into every bit of talent they have. And then the other half of it is, well, we're doing this in part because we can't afford Aaron Judge. And
right.
And we can't afford to get these top guys. And I know that latter part still annoys a lot of people that are like, yeah, stop it. You aren't the A's. You don't need to do Moneyball. But if it helps make the players they have better, I'm down for it, because guys, my gut is telling me, and I know a lot of you agree, including probably the two of you, that this is going to be the squad we're looking at when the year starts, the one that's heading into spring training right now. So let's waste no further time and talk about that squad with Gary Hill of Mariners Radio Network. He joins us next. Don't go anywhere.